Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 312, recorded November 21st, 2016. Sorry, I was just telling Russ I'm so excited for Christmas this year that I almost said December just now.
December 22nd.
I was just saying before we started recording, I'm really excited for Christmas. I can't wait to get a Christmas tree.
Well, who have we got this week?
We have Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Mick in Carnforth, UK, and Tom in Provo, Utah.
Yeah, plus a few things I wanted to mention as well.
You want to do those first?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
this, I have to say, though, your little note here about what you want to talk about sounds like a book. Like an inspirational book, Cyanobacteria and How I'm Beating It.
I guess it kind of does. Well, last week I told you about the cyanobacteria, I think, and the baby
sadness.
Shell dwellers. Did I tell them about all the baby little shell dwellers, or just the fact that she had produced one? Because I think there have been two broods so far.
I don't remember where we were at
There's the tiny little dwarfed shell dweller who I moved to the other tank, and she produced the fry. And there are at least 9 fry in there now. So I'm not sure.
We'll
there may
see
be
how
two
they grow
broods.
Up.
But
they've got the same...
Yeah, I'm not. I'm feeling bad about that because they're beautiful little fish. The little fry seem healthy and everything, but I don't want that gene going into the colony. But anyway.
But that's why you moved her into the other tank.
Right. But I don't really want to dispose of them either. That's not cool. I don't know. It's difficult. But I need to tell you about the cyanobacteria that was causing, all these problems in the multi tank. Basically, I think I have it under control. It's almost gone, and I've used a multi-pronged approach. I cut down the...
That was a joke.
Was it?
A multi-pronged approach.
Oh, it was. I didn't even mean to do that. That's kind of funny, because it's a multi-tank and a multi-pronged approach. You got it. I made the joke. I didn't even
that's
get
okay.
it.
Okay, I did one of those earlier today, or yesterday. I can't remember even what it was.
You did one recently, too. Yeah, that's true.
And I didn't even get it until after everybody else left.
So
accidental pun people.
Yeah, see, it's more fun when it's not intended, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I tried several things, and you know about the one I tried last time with the hydrogen peroxide treatment, and that just was a disaster, but... Then I was thinking, stepping back a little bit, it kind of gave me a wake-up call, I guess, and I'm going to put a video out about this, actually, but it kind of shocked me into thinking, what am I doing trying to treat this with hydrogen peroxide? I know what I should be doing. I need to be looking at the system and saying, I am providing an ideal environment for cyanobacteria. I don't want to be. How can I make this environment less than ideal for the cyanobacteria to the point that they will
leave.
Disappear and still keep the fish happy? And that's the approach I started to take. So I thought, I needed to look up some things and find out more about the requirements of cyanobacteria because I really hadn't dealt with it very much. I remember way back in 2002 or something, like a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Having some minor issues with it on some lace rock in a tank. There were small amounts of it. And figuring out how to deal with that wasn't that big of a deal because there was only a small amount. But this tank, it just was like an explosion of cyanobacteria. It was awful. And I was thinking, what's going on? And this is a system, I haven't worked with Tanganyikan lake systems or trying to replicate them before I'd done Malawi systems, but it's a little different. And anyway, I couldn't include a lot of the plant life that I often have included in tanks that can help, remove some of the nutrients that the cyanobacteria was using and so on. Anyway, so I thought, what can I do? So I reduced the photoperiod, knowing that cyanobacteria is photosynthetic, but it also can take nutrients when it doesn't have light. It's pretty versatile that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's so low, cutting down the light can't kill it. Itself, but at least I thought, it's going to be more efficient for it to get energy through light, so I might as well cut the light, and that will just, knock a little chip off of this whole, of its armor,
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing I did was increase the circulation in the tank. On Saturday, I just went and bought a filter, a bio-wheel filter. I like those. I've said that before. Part of the reason is because the bacteria don't take oxygen from the water column because they're taking it from the atmosphere. And cyanobacteria don't particularly like high dissolved oxygen levels or a lot of circulation in the water. So I figured I'm going to put this filter on. It was a 200-gallon-per-hour filter. There was already a 100-gallon-per-hour filter on the tank, so now there's 300 gallons per hour being circulated through the tank in a 20-gallon tank. And I thought, you know, that's pretty decent circulation. That's not too bad. And that almost instantly had an effect. Within fewer than 24 hours, I was seeing an effect. Within 48, there was a big effect. So it's really helping, seems to be helping with that. I also have been putting in the Seachem Flourish Excel, which is supposed to help, and for whatever reason, and that the particular chemical composition of it is antibacterial in some cases, and knowing that it is safer for fish than hydrogen peroxide is, I felt a little more comfortable putting that in, having used it for years, putting it in my tanks to provide a carbon source for plants to grow. I felt like, okay, I can do this. I'm gonna put this in, and I've been dosing it. That seems to have an effect too. So within the past couple of days, there's been a huge positive effect reducing the cyanobacteria. The new shell dwellers are doing great. There are at least, I think, two, maybe three females in the group. I added six multis to the tank. There was already one in there that was doing well. You know, that had survived the ordeal, and then there were the two others in the other tank. But I think there are at least two females, and they look like they are trying to entice the males into the shells. Everybody's doing great. I've been feeding them lots and lots of live Daphnia, which is another thing I was doing. Well, I shouldn't say lots and lots. I've been feeding them a diet that has consisted mainly of live Daphnia, but I haven't been feeding them excessive amounts because I've been trying to keep the nutrient levels low. But what I mean is most of the food that does go into the tank is live Daphnia for now, because that stays alive until the fish eat them, so I don't have to worry that it's going to fall into a corner and rot somewhere like some of the other food might if they happen to miss it, which I think is important in dealing with the cyanobacteria. So there are some other things I've been doing too. But anyway, I'm really excited to see that it seems to be, you know, on its way out. The cyanobacterial problem seems to be on its way out. Shell dwellers seem to be doing really well, and now I just have to figure out what I'm doing with those fry. But there you go. Now let's on to our contributors for the week.
Okay. We're going to do Jeremiah first. Mm-hmm. And he says, hello again, Russ and Kelly. I recorded a video of my 20-gallon extra-tall aquarium to send you an update. I'm still recovering from a cold, so it sounded grosser than I hoped. So instead, I'm sending a text update to spare everyone the experience. I'll do a video when my voice is less disgusting. I hope you feel better soon.
Me too.
I added some Java moss to the lava rock in the tank, as well as some more neons, and I now have a little school of 8 neons. I tried a new method of acclimation, so I'm having better success than in the past. Uwaru Joey?
Uwaru.
Uwaru.
Uwaru Joey.
Joey.
It's the king of do-it-yourself. Same guy.
Oh, okay. On YouTube, did a recent-ish video on acclimation that explains the method better than I can. I'm considering, did he send us a link, or do we know where that video is?
Well, it's on the channel of the King of Do-It-Yourself.
Okay, well, you can go look it up.
And it's a good video. I've seen it. Mm-hmm. One thing that he mentions that not everybody always mentions is that when you're acclimating, you need to make sure not to expose the water in the bag. And it partly depends on how long, you know, the fish have been in the bag. Mm-hmm. But if they've been in the bag for a fair amount of time, as the carbon dioxide that they're, you know, respirating, they're releasing, they're excreting carbon dioxide, and as they use up the oxygen in the bag, the carbon dioxide builds up in the water, makes the water more acidic. Therefore, in so doing, it reduces the toxicity of the ammonia by causing it to change into ammonium, which is much less toxic. So all the ammonia that's been building up in the bag, with the CO2 that's been building up in the bag, it's in the form of ammonium, so it's not that toxic. As soon as you open the bag, oxygen, the CO2 starts diffusing out to equalize with the atmosphere.
And oxygen
and
goes
as it
back
does,
in.
The pH goes up, and the ammonium starts converting back into ammonia.
It can do that? Toxic.
Yes.
Dang.
It does that. And so you have to be careful in those situations to get the fish out of the water, out of that filthy water in the bag as soon as you can, and not let them sit in the bag with the, you know, exposed to the air, mm-hmm. or it'll be, they can get ammonia burns.
Wow.
I mean, it's that serious, and it happens quickly. And so that's one of the things you have to deal with. A lot of times you need to just open the bag, dump them in a net over a bucket, so they're out of that water and then into the tank, rather than letting them sit there.
As soon as you open the bag.
Yeah, some people will take the bag and let it float in the tank open, and that's when you can have serious problems. So
if you're floating the bag in the tank, keep it closed until right before you put them in.
Right, and if you're moving the fish from like tank A to tank B and it's 2 feet and it's only going to take a couple of minutes, it's not a big deal.
That's not, yeah.
But if you had fish shipped in from, you know,
the mail,
a different state, and they've been in the bag for 3 days, that's a serious issue. So, yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
It's a good video. Go check it out.
He says, I'm considering adding some sort of shrimp to help with tank maintenance, but it sounds like neons might eat them. I briefly considered a mono shrimp, but it seems like they could eat the neons. Currently, I only have a nerite snail myself and some pond snails for cleanup. I'm going to look at filter prices this weekend and possibly replace my current filter for something with a bit more flow.
And I would say neons and red cherry shrimp, or other types of similar shrimp, Neocaridina shrimp, probably you'll do okay in as far as having a reproducing population of shrimp. I have kept neons with red cherry shrimp and wild type red cherry shrimp without any issues. I'm sure the neons do pick off some babies once in a while, or a newly molted adult. But at the same time, I had a population of neons, like when we were in Hawaii, I had mm-hmm. a tank full of neons and a 20-gallon high, fairly heavily planted, lots of the wild-type red cherry shrimp, because you can buy them for 10 cents, and because there's a feral population in Hawaii, so I had lots of those in there, but they were breeding, and the numbers would increase, you know, they increased for a while until they settled out, but there were plenty of them in there to perform, you know, the algae crew duties I needed them to perform, without worrying about the neons, you know, destroying them. So they did well with neons. They don't do as well with some of their fish, but with neons, as long as there are lots of plants like the Java moss you have in there, Java ferns, that stuff, you should be fine. I think it Neocaridina shrimp would be fine in there. That's what I'm going to say.
Okay. And then he goes on to non-fishy. He says, as far as beetles go, I suggest www.roachcrossing.com as a resource. I buy all my roaches from Kyle, and I've purchased other terrestrial invertebrates from him as well. Hybridization or mislabeling is an issue in the invert world as well, but since you're using them for feeders, I doubt the fish will mind. he's talking about the mini mealworms.
Yeah, the mini mealworms, which may indeed be the buffalo worms, like in the video. One thing, yeah, he's got a cool site, actually. And, you know, he's the one who isolated the captive population of Dalmatian isopods.
Cool.
I have some of.
Is that where you got them from him?
No, I got them from somebody else. Actually, I got mine from three different sources. My population is sent from three different sources, but all of them came from him.
That's pretty cool.
Originally, he's the isolator of that particular cultivar.
Dalmatian isopod grandpapa.
In a sense, yeah. He's got some good stuff, and he does have the same species of beetle that I have. Sale. I went back and checked his website after I saw Jeremiah's email, and he does have that species. At the moment, he doesn't have any others besides Dermestids, but it won't hurt to go back and check again later.
And he closes, he says, I'll hopefully be getting the 40-gallon from my co-worker soon, and then I can start planning around axolotls more.
Cool.
Hooray, axolotls.
Yeah, ours is doing really well. Mm-hmm. When we got it, its gills were a little bit... No, they didn't look the greatest, but now that we've got it in a tank where it's nice and cool in the, you know, the 60s Fahrenheit, maybe 65, 68 degrees, its gills are more colorful, and they're starting to, you know, plume out, look more feathery, so it's doing better. Mm-hmm. Seems to be pretty happy.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jeremiah. Should we go to Mick?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he says, hi guys, belated commiserations coupled with congratulations on the Shell Dweller. Sounds like a bit of a roller coaster with those.
It has been, that's but true. I'm hoping that it'll be over soon, the roller coaster part.
He says, intrigued and excited about having a few interviews set up to keep all us Aquarimax addicts happy over the Christmas period.
Indeed.
Should we just... right before we recorded this episode, we just recorded an interview with somebody, so we're going to save that for you for Christmas.
Yep. The first
we'll
one
put
is going to be...
a virtual bow on it.
Looks like it's going to be the 21st is the first one that's going to come out.
So, just in time for Christmas.
Yep. And then there'll be two others right after that. One that we're recording tomorrow, and then one we're recording next week.
Yeah. So, you'll have several over the holidays. We have been having some building work done at home for the last month, so the fish have had to take a back seat lately. I am 4 weeks overdue on a water change on the sailfin tank, and the polyfilter I put in to help offset the excess organics, etc., is looking quite exhausted. I managed to take a short video of it last night. Feel free to post it up and share it if you like.
And best we will fishes. Do that. The tank looks really nice, too. Nice setup. And Molly's,
good,
you know, are
good
cool.
Good luck on your house. That can be stressful.
Indeed.
I hope it finishes soon for you. Okay. Oh, Tom and Provo.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Says Russ and Kelly, not sure how you feel about meteorological phenomena such as drizzly fall days, but I find them eminently suitable for staying in the house and enjoying one's aquarium.
Yeah.
I will tell you, my daughter and I, we kind of joke, lament about this every year when it gets cold like it does here in Utah, and we just think, why do humans not hibernate? Why do we have to go outside in this? Can we just go back to bed for 2 months? So yes, I like staying in the house on those days. He says, I sometimes go bird watching in fall and winter, but the aquarium in my office provides a much warmer location to pursue a hobby.
Yeah, and then when your hands get wet, you can just dry them off.
Yeah.
And your shoes don't usually get wet.
Mm-hmm. About a month ago, I received some Chiapas swordtails, Xiphophorus alvarezi, and this week I found their first fry.
Cool.
Yeah, of course, breeding a swordtail is no great accomplishment, but I was still pleased, especially because it arrived within a couple of days of our most recent grandson. Oh, happy coincidences.
Hey, congratulations. Yeah.
The grandson was 7 pounds. The swordtail was, I think, somewhat less.
One would hope so.
Probably, yes. Congratulations on your grandbaby. That's exciting. I'd like your opinion on how I have set up my filter. I am using a Fluval Aqua Clear, which I like because the rectangular compartment permits the use of almost any shape or kind of media.
One thing I very much appreciate about that type of filter, too. See that one right there across the room?
Oh, is that what
Fluval
that is?
Fluval Aqua Clear, right there.
See, there we go. Although the kit came with only 2 mesh bags of ceramic media, I have added a third bag, which sticks above the surface of the water, but still stays wet as water runs over it. My thinking is that this may provide additional oxygen to the bacteria. I've also added a layer of polyfilter on the bottom of the filter stack. The original purpose was to eliminate the oily layer I was finding on the top of the water column. It seemed to be doing so well that I have decided to keep polyfilter in the mix regularly. Do you or Mick have thoughts on how long a polyfilter pad can remain viable in a tank? The package instructions suggest that in fresh water you can soak a used filter in a 10% marine saltwater solution and then rinse well in fresh water. Any ideas about how often, if at all, will this be effective in renewal of the polyfilter?
Hmm.
Beatus est piscicus. Tom and Provo, where it is cool and drizzly.
Yeah, it's cool and drizzly up here because we're only an hour and a half north.
Yep.
I want to kind of defer to Mick on that, and the reason why is because I've never used polyfilter. But it makes sense to me that that soaking it in salt water, you could probably remove some of the things that you've got trapped in there. But I don't know. I don't know how often. I think it partly depends on your system, what kinds of wastes are in there. But since Mick just mentioned about his polyfilter being nearly exhausted in his Amali tank.
But he did say it had been several weeks.
Yeah. What I mean is he probably will have a good idea of how often it needs to be renewed, or if he feels like it's better just to put new stuff in and then try to recharge it. I know that zeolite can be recharged that way, soaking in a saline solution. Zeolite is an ammonia-absorbing resin. So, and it would be interesting to find that out. I'd like to know that, too. I haven't had recent issues with oily scum on the surface of the tank, but then I'm not doing any like high-tech planted tanks right now, and that's one place that often shows up. But I'm kind of interested
plus
in trying this.
Plus, we haven't been to Mos Eisley lately.
That's true. So the wretched hive of scum and villainy, you know,
hasn't really visited our tanks lately.
That's true. But I'm thinking it might be interesting to see what that might do with cyanobacteria. I don't know if it would do anything, but it's interesting to think about. So anyway, so Mick, there you go. Could you shed some light on this question of Tom's? I would be interested in hearing the answer as well. I think that's all for now, ladies and gentlemen. Do you have anything that I'm missing? Is there anything I'm missing?
Just happy Thanksgiving to those of you who will be having Thanksgiving this week.
Yeah, that's true.
Those of you who will not, just eat something yummy, because why not?
And have a happy week.
Yeah, make some pie.
And so, until next time, ladies and gentlemen.
May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.